Ford made $1 billion last quarter?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Yes, Ford made $1 billion. The company posted that result this morning, surprising analysts who were expecting a loss. Let's talk about it with David Welch, auto industry reporter at Business Week. He joins us live from Detroit. Morning, David.
Morning. How are you?
I'm okay. U.S. automakers don't make money. How'd Ford turn it around last quarter?
Well, they did a couple of things right. First, they took out about $4.5 billion in costs throughout this year. That helped them quite a bit. And the other thing is they actually got a much better pricing for the cars they're selling. They're producing fewer of them, so they don't have to foist them off on consumers with big discounts. And some of the new models have been liked well enough to command better sticker prices than their cars have in the past.
And how important was it that Ford is the big three car maker that didn't go bankrupt, didn't take taxpayer money?
Well, that did two things. One, you do have a section of the populace that just doesn't like government bailouts, so they're not going to buy from GM and Chrysler. So people like American cars who fit in that camp would certainly look toward Ford instead. And the other thing is, since Ford borrowed some $28 billion well prior to the crisis, they have enough money and everyone feels secure throughout this year that they would be around, you know, a couple years from now to honor warranties and that sort of thing, whereas there was some concern that GM and Chrysler would not.
But Ford still has some $20 billion in debt, and its American factory workers just said no to contract concessions. How big a deal is that labor divide?
Well, it's no small affair, but you know, the bottom line is Ford has taken out a lot in costs where they can probably remain in the black even without those cuts. It doesn't help, though. I mean, there are a few things they're going to need out of that agreement. I think they'll make a compromise, and the compromises will be something like eliminating the no-strike clause, which is in place for the 2011 labor talks, and they'll still get the savings they want, but the union will get its ability to strike back, and they'll probably move on from there. That's my guess.
Okay, David Welch, auto industry reporter at Business Week. We thank you.
Thank you.
Some good news this morning in economic data, too. Construction spending and pending home sales jumped in September, and a private manufacturing index grew last month at the fastest pace in more than 3 years. And the S&P 500 and the Dow are both up more than 1%. So the Dow is up 108 at 9,821. European markets rose today, and Asian stocks were mostly down. The New York Post says Pabst Brewing Company, it's going up for sale. The beer company known for cheap brews seems to be worth a lot these days, as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins tells us.
The company from Milwaukee is one of only a few privately owned brewers left in the country. It has a laundry list of dive bar favorites: Schmidt, Schlitz, Colt 45, and of course, PBR.
What do you have?
Pabst Blue Ribbon!
Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer!
Pabst has dusted off several brands and marketed them with a wink and a little irony to hipsters and college kids. Gary Hemphill is the managing director of the Beverage Marketing Corporation.
Well, it's not unheard of to bring back a brand that's seen its sales languish a bit. But I would say what they've done is a fairly tall accomplishment.
The Post reports PBR saw its sales increase 21% this summer. Altogether, the company could be worth as much as $300 million. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Nova, Becoming Human on PBS, the evolution of evolution. Nova, Becoming Human, Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on PBS.
The American and Chinese presidents meet in Beijing this month to talk about their differences on trade and climate. But author Zachary Carabel says these countries are more in step than you might think. His new book is called Superfusion: How China and America Became One Economy and Why the World's Prosperity Depends on It. Zachary, good morning.
Good morning.
I was surprised to read in your book how much we not only buy from China, but the massive amount we sell to China, from equipment to know-how to fried chicken and lipstick. But calling the U.S. and China one economy, how do you figure?
Well, it's obviously meant to be a provocative title, and it's more to say that these economic systems have become so intimately intertwined over the past 10 to 20 years, that they are becoming their own system that in many ways transcends the national boundaries of each country.
The U.S. and China are involved in high-level trade talks right now. What do you expect to come out of those?
You know, I expect the rhetoric to continue to be very favorable. Chinese diplomacy is a behind-closed-doors, say pretty anodyne, generic things in public, and then get into the nitty-gritty away from the public eye. You know, in private, it's a little more difficult to tell because there's still a degree to which both countries and the leadership of both countries see themselves as able to browbeat the other or get the other to do what they want. And that is unrealistic. Neither the United States nor China are amenable to that kind of pressure from the other.
Is China's growth eventually going to somehow swamp the U.S. economy? Are we at a disadvantage because of it?
That's unclear. I think a lot of that depends on the degree to which the United States is able to remain vibrant, innovative, and creative, is able to, in fact, create a new generation economy to replace the economy that we've been leaving. And if we're not able to, then China, which is very much in an upward swing and does have a lot of self-confidence in their ability to carve out their own future, may, in fact, over the coming decades, surpass or overtake the United States as the locus of global economic activity. And to some degree, there's an inevitability to that. As they prosper more, the relative position of the United States will shift. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for the United States, certainly not a bad thing for the world, and nor should we view it that way.
Zachary Karabell is the author of Superfusion, How China and America Became One Economy and Why the World's Prosperity Depends on It. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, in the movie Aliens, the creatures were tough, but they could not walk around inside a human forklift like Sigourney Weaver could.
Come on!
The arms of that machine gave her superhuman strength. And now Panasonic has made those arms a reality. The dual arm power amplification robot is being developed for construction, but potential uses include cargo loading, disaster relief, and sending monsters hurtling into space. It's Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.